up, everybody? It's Friday. It's sunny out. Slight sliver of winter. It's a little chilly, but more like baby autumn. Anyways, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM, Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from the north side of Lexington, Kentucky. My name is Chuck, and with me in the studio is a very special guest. And what we like to do here on Bluegrass Bios is showcase people doing extraordinary things with a unique connection to Kentucky and the bluegrass. And this man is indeed one of those people. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I was just wondering who you were talking about. Yeah. Because we're the only two people in the room. I'm looking around like, man.
That person is the spirit of...
This person sitting over here in this other chair. Peace, everybody. My name is Hendrick Floyd, a.k.a. Shiesty Christ. And happy to be here with my beautiful brother, Chuck.
Well, thank you. Thank you, my man. And, you know, it's always good to talk to you. Always good to hang.
Oh, yeah. We're going to do this again today.
A lot of riffing, a lot of positive vibes.
Hashtag positive vibes.
Yeah, all day. Yeah. That's what we do on Fridays. So, we are back-to-back. You know, normally this show runs from noon to 2, and then your show comes on at 3. So, you know, we are holding up. It's positive Fridays.
Yeah, man. That's what it's all about.
Hashtag Hendrick Fridays.
Hashtag positivity.
So, Hendrick, the first question I want to ask you, you know, let's get started from the beginning. Where were you born? Where are you from?
Right here in Lexington, brother. This is my home. This is my hometown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where'd you grow up? What neighborhood?
Actually, I had the privilege. One of the beauties of being poor is that you get the opportunity to see a lot of places.
I know the feeling.
Exactly. I think the one thing that that having a certain layer of wealth affords you is the stability of place. Mm. I had the disadvantaged advantage of growing up in a lot of different places, and so pretty much every side of town. Mm. If you can name it, I've lived on it in one capacity or another.
Mm, I understand.
Yeah,
get really good at packing boxes.
Too good at packing boxes, brother.
Yeah,
yeah, most definitely.
So where'd you go to school at?
You mean high school?
Yeah,
Henry Clay High School.
Henry Clay High School.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, Henry Clay High School. In fact, yeah, it's funny, man. Like I think there's a sensibility of that we're all sort of connected to, like, you know, our high school. It's like, well, what are you? It's like, well, I'm a Blue Devil.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Creeker. Yeah. You know, I'm a Defender. You know what I mean? You know, it's very, very interesting, man.
It is. Yeah. There's a lot of pride in schools, and kind of, it seems like just the tip of the neighborhood pride vibe.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, I'm from Station, I'm from the North.
Yeah, side. Yeah, you own it too. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, no matter, because people are going to make you own it.
Of course.
Like, either you own it or people are going to be like, dude, hey man, we know where you went to school.
Right, and plus we'll see a UK in a few years, so
exactly.
Better get on it.
Exactly. You know, we all become Wildcats.
Yeah, man. So after high school, what'd you end up doing?
So I ended up kind of leaving here after high school. I spent some time in Detroit, and it was very, very interesting, man. I think being a young man, and like I think I was falling into what a lot of people do when they're young. It's like, I just need to get out of here.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Which is beautiful. Like legit, if you're in a town, there's nothing better to do than to get out of that town, because it's like you get out and you see things just in a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, because I've always been a sort of hyper thinker, I was like, you know, I don't want the easy route. I don't want to just like go out and be like, okay, you know, I'm gonna go out and just like go to this new town where no one really knows me, and I'm just gonna take it by storm and just kind of become a new person. I said, you know, ultimately, man, I just want to go back to my town, man, and become a better me, like change me in my space and in my place, man.
Yeah,
yeah.
You got to get out to look in.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man.
And yeah, and I think there's something like almost indigenously Kentuckian about leaving and going somewhere and learning new things, exploring new spaces, seeing new people, learning more about yourself, and then coming back and sharing that information with us here in Lexington.
Well, it's important, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important because you come in anew. You come back. You come back a new person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to speak.
So in that trip, you were in Detroit for a while.
Yeah.
When did you move back to Lexington?
Essentially 95. Yeah.
Cool. And where were you when you first heard about hip hop? How did hip hop come into your life?
Man, it's very, actually, it's very, I mean, so, I mean, my life timeline and hip hop's life timeline are very much sort of interwoven. Like, mm-hmm. like hip hop and I are the same age, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
I gave birth at a street party.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting, man, because hip hop for me was essentially something, that we grew up with, and it was just kind of like there, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Yeah. It's almost like, maybe coming up in the midst of the jazz revolution or in the rock, you know, revolution. If you were there, you just kind of feel like it's just in your blood. It doesn't feel like a thing that's a part of you. I mean, that's not a part of you. Mm. And I think hip hop felt that way.
Do you remember what your first hip hop record was?
That I bought?
That you bought.
With my own money?
Your own money.
Yeah, it was Beastie Boys License to Ill.
It was a cassette?
Cassette. Yeah, I bought that in, I think you and I've had this conversation before. Yeah. I bought that in Kmart. And I remember getting home and being like, where are the cuss words?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I remember thinking to myself, okay, I will never buy another rap album,
right.
You know, from Kmart, oh, you know, yeah. ever again.
Moral,
you know,
majority smacked, yeah, that down,
yeah,
real fast.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, I felt, that it was a personal sort of violation, you know what I mean? Of like art. Maybe it was like the first time I remember being like, wow, like someone can censor, mm-hmm. like your words, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like they can, like, you can say this, and then they can come in and go, okay, no, you didn't say that.
Yeah.
Because we're going to blank it out, and then we're not going to tell the people that we're doing it. Then we're going to, you know, then we're going to give it to them. We're going to sell it to them. You know, it's definitely, probably my biggest disappointment, and probably the first time I ever realized that, that censorship was real.
Yeah, it makes me think of that Sheryl Crow song where she talks about, you know, All I Want to Do, where she talks about, you know, pointing out the fact that at Walmart, a kid can go in there and buy a gun, but
yes.
you can't buy an album with a cuss word.
Weird,
on it.
Right?
And Walmart refused to sell that album because she put that on there.
Of course.
So,
yeah, weird. Yeah.
Corporatization
yeah, weird.
Of art.
Yeah. You know? Well, it goes to show that, you know, what's right is whatever those in power say is right. You know
right,
what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't matter that these two things don't seem to make any sense. Mm-hmm. What matters is that's what we want to do because we have all the power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Hendrick, when you moved back to Lexington in 95, yeah. you know, what was the hip hop scene like in Lexington then?
Oh man, so I've always, you know, said, the beauty of hip hop in Lexington was that, that ultimately, it's never had a bad period. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. And, unlike a lot of other different musics, you know, I think Lexington has this weird history of like having great, and anyone out there who's listening, you know, knows this, like having great bands. So there are these, you know, like top five bands that like are just killing the scene. Mm-hmm. And then those bands don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Either they break up or those people move on, mm-hmm. just bigger and better stuff, but they kind of like separate themselves
100%.
from this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, man, to kind of see it. But hip hop has always been something that's like consistently good,
mm-hmm.
right? It's been good since.
Yeah, it's like everybody else is sprinting, but hip hop's a marathon running.
No doubt about it, man.
Itself.
Yeah, man. Yeah, like that at good pace too. You know, mm-hmm. when you get that good run,
oh,
in,
yeah.
you know, when you hit that zone,
get that runner's
like,
high.
Yeah, like okay, like mm-hmm. stay right here. Like
yeah.
if I just run at this speed, I can run forever.
So who were some acts that were
yeah
around, I mean, the time that you that come to mind?
Yeah, just early on, like it's funny, so like that Dap record that's mm-hmm. over there in the corner,
yeah,
I think I saw that like a week or two ago. I smiled when I came in. That's got to be Yusef's
yeah
record.
Actually, it's Dap does a show with us on Mondays.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. But actually it was funny because that record, that was so at the time that record came out, you kind of had like maybe an old guard in hip hop, like the older brothers were like already kind of like, because they were older, they could just do a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that record was out, and a few other brothers had kind of put records out too. And those were kind of like, oh, that's good. It's a good look because, you know, someone local was putting a record out.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, like good acts were like Joey Truax's crew. The LEX Tretch crew, they were mm-hmm. called. Then you had, of course, Mad Militia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our collective, I think Deacon calls us Wu-Tang before Wu-Tang.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, and I want to ask you a little bit more about Mad Militia. How did Mad Militia come about, and how many members were there at its max?
Yeah, so this goes back to your first question. Like, so a lot of the brothers who started Mad Militia started at Bryan Station. And it was just like a local group of guys, El Hajj and Shahad or Royal Illness and a lot of other brothers who got together, and like they were like a righteous like rap collective. Mm-hmm. And I knew those brothers. I knew those brothers from the park, from the neighborhood park, El Hajj specifically. And mm-hmm. and that was my connection to those brothers because I was a little older. Mm-hmm. Than they were, but we were all like, yeah, we all kind of ran together. So I don't know. Militia's like one of those crews. It's very, very, very similar to like Wu-Tang, like, mm-hmm. like legit, like they're, I mean, you know, Lee G, obviously Lee G is like second wave, mm-hmm. you know, Militia,
yeah,
you know, like we're old dudes for real, you yeah. know, like, so I, you can't put a number yeah. on it. It's just one of those things where like you start unlocking it, man, yeah. and you just realize that it's just ridiculous, man.
There's a few,
yeah.
Because I remember, I think when the first time I saw Mad Militia, there were maybe 9 people on stage, and I just remember thinking,
that sounds
like,
about right at the time.
Wow, all these folks are in this on yeah. this song.
Yeah,
you know, it's a song with 9 verses.
Yeah,
I was blown away. You know,
yeah, I actually remember. It's funny, we did a show once. Maybe you were even at this show. I don't know what show you're talking about. I know we did a show at UK, mm-hmm. and I remember people just looking at us like, how there's so many
yeah.
of y'all? Like, how is this even going to work?
That might have been me looking at you like,
no,
wow, there's a lot of people in this.
Like, too many people.
Yeah, this is like, a real yeah, militia.
Yeah, like legit. But when we rolled, we always rolled incredibly deep, mm-hmm. and we're always, like, sharpening each other, you mm-hmm. know? And literally, every member of Militia just continues to get better. Mm-hmm. Like it's you know, a Militia is fine wine.
Yeah,
for sure.
You know
what I mean? Like, it's just like, just when you think that, you know, that the power has tapped out, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like, okay, we just go back and
somebody
we reabsorb
back.
Some yeah. energy and
recharge,
man, and
you
come
know,
back.
You know, you told me the story about yeah. when you all opened up for ICP,
yeah.
for Insane Clown
yeah.
Posse at the
yeah.
team.
Yeah.
And that before your set was over, that their management came over and asked you guys to stop performing.
Yeah, true story. Like a little bit of history. So ICP came here. I think that show was at the Dame. Mm-hmm. If memory serves me correctly, and I'm certain that it does. And the house was packed. And it was just one of those moments where, you know how shows work. A lot of times it's like, okay, you have some decent little acts, and then the main act gets on. Mm-hmm. Everyone kind of rolls their eyes when the before act comes on. Right. They're like, man, come on, man, get these guys off stage.
Yeah.
Let's go. But we were killing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember their manager walking over to the stage manager, and he was like, get these guys off. Because he was just like, look, the crowd is just like going to erupt in a friend. Like, we want to save some of that energy for the ICP
yeah.
show. This guy was like, no, like, this is happening too soon. Like,
yeah.
no, shut it down. And
you usurped the Juggalos.
Yeah, yeah. No, we did. And what was funny about that show in particular is that when we got off stage, literally half the crowd or more left. You know what I mean?
Wow.
It was kind of like, okay, the show is over. The show is done.
Yeah.
Even
guess
though
that was
they
ICP.
Cut it short.
Yeah.
Like, legit. Like, I just remember, like, the crowd. Yeah, the crowd like dispersed. Like, okay, we got what we came for, and mm-hmm. that was kind of like, okay, you know,
that's
crazy.
How you know.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. And so, you know, you had mentioned that your life and hip hop kind of intertwine.
Yeah,
you know, so when you were coming up here in Lexington, you know, were there a lot of battles going on?
Oh,
were there a lot of like the Five Elements? Were people out there breaking?
Yeah.
Graffiti.
Yeah. I mean, like some of my earliest memories are, you know, hip hop used to be an all in sort of inclusive thing. Like
mm-hmm.
now, I think. It's something where, you know, like it's like one thing, you know what I mean? Like you're a rapper
mm-hmm.
or that, you know, that's it.
Right.
But back when we were coming up, like literally, you knew how to break,
mm-hmm.
you know, break dance. You knew how to rap,
mm-hmm.
You knew how to beatbox,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? You knew how, you know, just to, you know, you were throwing graffiti. Everyone had their little joints.
Mm-hmm.
The really advanced people were producing and DJing. I mean, you know, I hit Joey Truax up recently. I said, you know, like what people don't realize is that Joey and I go way, way, way back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just a little older, but
I think he calls you Lefty.
Yeah, he does call me Lefty. For that's a whole other story. But you know, but we go way back, and I remember actually going to, we went to Bryan Station together for like a year.
Oh, cool.
And I remember like being in the hallway, and I don't know whether it was one of those situations where like we were both skipping class, which I think it was, I think that was the case. And I remember like walking around the hallway, and I remember, man, like he just started like beatboxing, and we, and I was just rapping like in the hallway. Back then he went by the name Baby J.
Yeah.
Before he was, you know, Truax, but he went by Baby J.
Pre-Yusef days.
Yeah, yeah. But you had, but to your question though, you just had so many people that were really into all the art forms of hip hop. And you had to be. And so, yes, there were a lot of battles.
Yeah. Where were those going down at?
Oh man, everywhere, man. Yeah. I mean, I used to wake up every day and go to Castlewood Park. At the time my grandmother lived on Eddy Street. And we lived on 12th Street, and I would spend time in between the 12th Street and Eddy Street houses. And so every morning I would get up and I would put my like my hip hop attire on, and I would, you know, go to the park, and I'm like, okay, who am I gonna eat up today? You know, who's gonna get it? Who's gonna get it today? You know, and that's, it's funny, man, because you know, this is like people get up and they go to start trouble, right? But hip hop was like the first art form where like you literally engaged in battle, you know, in really in a way that someone would fight, you know, the beat it video, yeah, when they
exactly,
you know, when
pull
they
the knife,
when
fight,
they pull the knife, yeah, out, like all the hip hop battles felt that way. And that's how you got better and sharper. You just went every day, and you know, you just try to like just take a MC out. If you could just dethrone someone, like your day was made. It's like, yeah,
that's awesome.
Somebody's gonna get it today.
Yeah. And you know, I think, and to look at it, the bigger picture too, as far as media support at the time of hip hop, you know, RFL went on the air, WRFL 88.1 went on the air in 89. And you know, that was at the time, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, was the only station playing hip hop in Lexington.
It's true.
For a long period of time.
No, it's true. It's true. In fact, it's a lot easier. Not only was WRFL the like the original like supporter of hip hop, like legit, I think all of us in the hip hop community knew that if we could put a tape together, that we could take it down to the station.
Yeah.
And I actually remember us going to the station back in those days, and you know, that mailbox that sat on the outside, because you could never get in, you know, you knock on the door or whatever.
No one's
back in those days, like no one cared to answer the door at all. But we would put our demo tapes there. And then, you know, you just kind of tune in, and you just like, and you know, you'd hear your tape, you know, if some of those shows exist, like, you know, down through time, especially really early, then you can hear some of our early demos. Like from way, way back in the days, man.
Yeah.
We would record and then we would just go drop them off.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So Hendrick, when you created the Shiesty Christ alias, when was that, and what inspired you to start writing, rhymes?
Man, that's a fantastic question. I've always considered myself, you know, like someone who, I don't want to use the term fell into it, but it was almost like fate. Because a rarely told story that I do tell some people from time to time is that I actually started writing hip hop. The first time I wrote a rap song, there was a guy named Julius J Rock who lived down the street, and we were all sitting in the park on Eddy Street next to my grandmother's house, and he was being really braggadocious. Like, we were sitting down, there were three girls on the bench, you know, so he was kind of like,
yeah,
look at me, I'm the rapper. And I remember I looked at him and I said, you know, like, that's not even impressive. Like anybody can do that. And he was like, well, if anybody can do it, then you do it then. And one of the girls had, she had a legal pad. And I was like, can I get a piece of paper and your pen? And I wrote this like quick rap on the spot, bam, 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 bam. And then I rapped it. And I remember the look on his face was like the look of defeat. You know, it was just like, oh man, like of all the people that I asked to write a rap, you know what I mean? Or like, if you can do it, then do it.
Yeah.
Then like he asked me. And really, that's really like the first time I ever even thought about writing a rap was really like a dare. And it just happened to be really good. And so I was like, okay. like, all right, I guess I'm a rapper now.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. That's a good way to get started.
That's it, man.
So how did the Shiesty Christ alias get started? When did that come about?
Yeah, I think we were just kind of coming up with sort of absurd names. The story I like to tell, obviously, is that really, you know, you don't create a name like that. You know, a name like that creates you.
Yeah, true.
Right? And that's how I feel. I feel like it's just one of those names that, like, chose me. You know, I didn't, you know, I didn't choose the game. The game chose me.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
I didn't choose the thug life. The thug life chose me.
Yeah.
You know, and
life comes at you.
Yeah, I think we were Mad Militia. I think Royal Illness and I talked about this before. And I think ultimately, though, I think we were all coming up with, like, maybe semi-blasphemous names for ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, sort of parallel names.
Of course, yeah.
You know, Shiesty Christ, you know, it's like a great duality. You know what I mean? Like, on the surface, it just seems like bad Jesus,
yeah,
you know, right?
Of course,
you know what I
mean? Yeah.
But it's like the name, if you think about it, and this is something I never think about, but if you think about it, Shiesty and Christ are really yin, and they're really yin and yang. Mm-hmm. It's like there are two sides of this coin.
True.
There's a sense of perfection on one side, and there's a sense of, like, of corrupt on the other side. I think that defines, you know, mankind.
Yeah, it's
we're all Shiesty Christ.
It's true. Selfishness versus altruism.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's where that name comes from.
But duality.
But people used to look at me crazy, including my best friend, Justin. You know what I mean? I remember the first time someone was like, yeah, this is Shiesty Christ. I remember him looking at me like, man, you blasphemer.
He's a Satanist.
Yeah, you devil worshiper. You
know what I mean? So when was the first track? When was the first time you went in the studio to drop a verse?
Man, it's a good question. One I don't necessarily have an answer to. Aaron Lee, who's done some stuff with, who's from Lexington, who did some stuff with Family Guy. Mm-hmm. He was, like, I guess the executive producer on Family Guy and a writer.
Uh-huh.
Also, I think the Cleveland Show and a few other things. We did an early demo, myself and my rap partner at the time, G13. We did early demos with him at his house.
Is that out there anywhere?
Yeah, there's somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's. I think G13 still has some of that stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, but I don't think that was the first time. I couldn't even tell you, man. In a basement somewhere, you know, passing a microphone.
For
and,
sure.
And back then, you know, someone would put a beat on, and if you had 5 MCs on a track, then you had to, like, then everyone would get on and they would rap, and if one person screwed up, you all had to do the song over again. And so they came to know me as the Studio Gestapo. All the homies, all the militia homies would be like, man, if you get on a track with Shiesty, man, like, you better nail it, because I would after a certain number of times I would just put people off tracks, like, you're done.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, you know, sorry, bro.
Sorry, can't get it done. Sorry. Come to work today.
Yeah, exactly, because they're making, and I think that's one of the things that defined militia, is that we knew we always had to be sharp. Mm-hmm. Because no one wanted to be the person that, you know, that pushed somebody to rewrite a song,
right?
You know, or to redo a song again.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
that makes sense. So, you know, I think my favorite part of hip hop and my favorite part of listening to hip hop is the uniqueness of the delivery and the obviously lyricism.
Yeah,
that's a huge part for me. And so, I'm curious, what is, you know, I think every MC has their own approach, their own ritual to sit down and write, whether it's writing it on its own and then putting it to the beat, or listening to the beat while you're writing, or marking out bars and filling in the gaps. You know, so Hendrick, what is your technique when you're writing a verse? What do you go through?
It really all depends. A lot of times I'll definitely let the music kind of dictate, you know, where I'm going. I think Guru from Gangstar was notorious for, like, just writing raps. And then Primo would come and drop a beat, and then Guru would rap over it, which is why he has these, like, incredibly long verses sometimes. You know what I mean? Because he did it that way, and some people do it that way. And I do it that way sometimes, but generally I'm going to let the music dictate kind of where I go with a piece of work.
That makes sense.
So
I know you've did a lot of collaborations in the beginning, a lot of features on different people's albums, you know, with No and a few other folks. And I know you did a mixtape called Oh My God with
Divine Karama.
So can you talk a little bit kind of about some of your early recorded stuff and, you know, some features that you've done?
You know, again, we did demos for, like, a really, really, really long time. And like a lot of people don't know this, but I actually left hip hop. I was like, okay, I'm good. I'd rather write, you know, like maybe find a novel wave or, you know, some philosophical text or something like that. You know what I mean? And so I left, and a good brother of ours, Baby Vegas, my brother did some time. And I remember just having such respect for the kind of person that he is. And what he meant for us. And I remember getting together with some of the fellas, and I said, you know, we need to get together and put together a mixtape to honor Vegas.
That's awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
And at the time, I just wasn't doing anything at all. In fact, Lee G used to, he used to always be like, man, I need you on a track. And I'm like, man, you know I'm done, man. Like come on, man. Mm-hmm. Like, leave me alone. You know what I mean? He'll tell you. You're like, legit, like, leave me alone. Like, I'm good, brother. Yeah. But when Vegas got locked up, we started putting together a mixtape for him, and that was the first time I'd written in a while. And kind of getting back, because you're dealing with like rappers or musician or artists, like it was kind of all over the place, like in terms of time and getting things done. And so what happened in the process is a tape that was in my, you know, the way I work mentally, it's like, okay, this is going to take a couple months.
Yeah,
we're going to get in there, or a couple weeks, we're going to get in there, knock this out, and I'm done, you know, again, like, I'm good. And then that process,
out of retirement, just for the day.
No, like legit, like that's exactly what it was. And it was kind of one of these legit slow underground retirements. Like, don't say anything, just like keep it moving.
Yeah.
And so we started doing this tape for him, and as it drug out, all the guys around me, and Deacon is guilty of this as well. All the guys around me are like, they found ways to kind of keep luring me like back into the studio. Yeah. Like, they're like, oh man. Yeah. Lefty's back, man.
Just keeping that honey close. just bringing you back to the hive.
Yeah. Brother, man, that's exactly what it was, man. So they just kept, like, my homie Jafar, who was producing at the time, like, just kept throwing me beats. And I would just go by. And I'm like, okay, just kind of stay sharp for this process. Because if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And so that drug out for a very, very, very long time. And in the process, I put together, like, a bunch of demos. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of stuff that's just kind of like still out there, just kind of sitting, like collecting dust. And what was funny is later on, they knew I had no desire to put out a record. And so they got together, a few of the homies, Sense and Jafar and Lee G, and they were going to put together a bootleg Shiesty Christ tape. Like, we got all these songs, man. We're gonna put his record out, and he's not gonna know, because they just knew
how
I just
shiesty.
Had, very shiesty, very shiesty, you know. And so, you know, it was like, and then from that, Deacon and I started working on the KY Aliens project, which, you know, and I didn't realize, but at the time he was kind of luring me in a little bit. And then he was like, hey, you know, we should do this project. And I was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. And so, like, one thing became another. And it's kind of like, I'm still here, really, because, like, people kept, like, hey, man, like, just come by. Let's put together some music. Because everything sort of parlayed into, you know, into the next thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I've been trying to get out for a long time.
Yeah. Well, we're glad no one's letting you yet.
No, I know.
So that's cool. So, you know, so maybe can we talk a little bit about the KY Aliens project?
Yeah.
Because that seemed to be the, you know, the next step.
Yeah, man. We did. So Deacon called me, and he was like, yo, man, I think it'd be a really cool idea if we put together this tape. Where we take AT Aliens beats from Outkast, and then we do our own sort of Kentucky version with all Kentucky artists. And will you help me executive produce that project? And I was like, yeah, you know. It's like, oh, that sounds really, really interesting. And so my idea, even coming into that, was I'm just going to rap on like one song, and then we'll corral all these other people, you know, together. And anyone who knows me knows that, like, when people are like not moving fast enough around me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when they're like, when people just aren't doing, like, I was like, okay, I'm just like, we're in a studio one day. I'm like, okay, I'll jump on that.
Screwing up their bars and the freestyle.
That's what it is. That was exactly it. And so, I think I ended up like on like five, you know, like five, like far more. And the funny story is, the one song I wanted to be on in that is the only song I'm not on that.
Just an instrumental.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I want to be on that one. And Deke was like, oh man, I already told, you know, so-and-so, that they could be on that. And I was like, ah, man, okay, cool. I'll just find something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you know, with Deacon the Villain and Cunnilingus, yeah, that connection, you know, living here and, you know, now they're all move about in different parts of the country. But there is that connection between Atlanta and Kentucky. So I love that project, and I really admire the lyricism. You know, it kind of happened too a little bit later on with the mixtape, you know, with Oh My God, with you and Divine Karama. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was just I think that project in particular was knowing Divine and knowing how dope he was, and that was kind of a generational thing. I think it was like there's this young lion, and then you got like this old, you know, halfway limping, you know, MC, you know what I mean? You know, and I was like, you know, let's, you know, we talked about it. We'd always talked about doing something together. And then we were like, hey, let's just do a project. Mm-hmm. And then we ended up, you know, just sort of knocking out that OMG project.
Yeah. And that's all over beats from Raekwon's Only Built for Cuban Links.
No. That was the mixtape. That was the Only Built for OMG.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
And Divine will tell you the only reason we, so.
Or I guess did that, the mixtape came first over the Raekwon stuff. And then y'all did the double album.
It right? did. So the, you know, Divine and I, we work a little different. He used to be really bad at this. Mm-hmm. And it's something I used to laugh at him about. I used to call him like, dude, man, you got to stop this. But what he would do is when he was putting a record together, he would like put like every time he got like a banger, he would put it out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because because at the time that's how people kind of did music. The blogs were heavy and like, that's how you generated buzz. And it was like, then that was a new thing.
Yeah.
And
singles,
I come from singles
and albums.
And I come from an era where you just work on a project, you finish that project and then you keep it moving. And this was the generational divide between the two of us because that was my mentality, but his mentality was, okay, we got one, let's put it out. Yeah. So when we were recording OMG, he kept putting out like records that for me would have been like never heard, you know what I mean? Like, he just kept putting these records out, and I called him one day and I said, bro, I said, man, you gotta stop putting these records out, man. And I said, like, let's finish a record, like let's just finish the record. And I said, man, if you put one more record out, man, I said I'm done, man. I said, we're not gonna do this. That's my brother. And so in order to kind of appease that sensibility with him, I said, look, I got an idea. I said, let's just do a mixtape. And we'll do a mixtape over all like Only Built for Cuban Links beats. And then we'll drop that, and that way the streets will be wedded, and they'll kind of like anticipate this project that we're coming out with. And we did that in the weekend. Like, we literally did that project. Like, there were times when I would be writing, and he would be in the booth, and then he would come out, and I would go in, and he would be out writing, and like we just knocked that out. We recorded that at Just Me's place.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it turned out great.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, and if it's all right with you, I'd like to play a track.
Yeah, please.
Off of that.
Yeah, yeah. Please. You know,
yeah. So this is a track called Wisdom Body, which this is my favorite verses from both of you all on the whole mixtape.
Oh, wow.
So we'll play this. Just in case you're joining us, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios. We're in here with Hendrick Floyd, a.k.a. Shiesty Christ. And nonetheless, we'll be back here in a little bit. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios on 93.9 WLXU. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Say, yeah, listen, I'm a fully famished woolly mammoth standing on the black man is chomping on a bully sandwich. My nigga, listen, let me be fully candid. The concrete jungle where the crack rock could be granted. Man on the moon, I don't think man is fully landed. In fact, damn it, I don't think we even from this planet. Pluto is too cold, no atmosphere, twofold Sirius B's density is heavier than true gold. Off the blue plate, yo, study Michel Foucault. Yeah, that ain't a shot at Jay-Z, I tell the truth though. And when I take a shot though, it's more like Boutros golly. The God body meets the God collie. I'm in the lobby, sipping knob creep wobbly. They in Zimbabwe or Mali, bumping mob deep probably. I'm like Lou Dobbs and Ollie. leaving boob jobs at Dolly.
Okay, check it out. Yo, I'm a Vietnam pilot, come flying with arms firing, bombs fire, Osama Saddam hybrid, the Viacom, you Miley Cyrus, I'm Ebola virus, yeah. Contact other artists via the palm pilot, when I the phone the right fly, I guess my palm is a pilot, flying my mind to heights crazy when Christ was a baby, he was something more like a Haitian, a white maybe, regardless he's my blood, if he pale then a part Caucasian, the God body dressed in food. Speaking of wisdom, Haile Selassie, Desmond Tutu, preaching in prison. I'm all Monty, less youthful, cheating and pitching. I'm something like Cameron Poe, I'm Con Air to Cyrus. The street burglar, pig hurdler, beat murderer, lyrics hurler, beach merchant, swimmer with serpents. Building sandcastles, I piss a ring to form a moat. I care if you dare fathom this in the kingdom, the more you go. Imagine Drew Peterson mixed with that dude, beat him in the street, killer, envision an asteroid target of Earth. I was birthed a prophet with blurry sockets and burning jackets. Burners popping like Sherpa, your rockets curb copping. Serving broccoli, working in pocket, Perkins and popping. Purse robbing turbans and the monster worshiping Allah. The church of God, the learning college, the burst of knowledge. To earn the profit till the curtains falling, dirt on my coffin. Birds flocking like a dead corpse in the Sahara Desert. My words dominant like a red Porsche versus a leopard. In a race which is the same, if you battle me, I scatter all your sheep. With one blow to your shepherd. I'm Led Zeppelin when I rock hard in the bed sexing. You a rock star, got lots of bars to your head, leave you headless. Disregard your necklace, take your neck, leave your necklace with an arm like Leffers. Got heart, your chest ball with a death wish.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Let's get it. Drop a little wisdom on y'all. It's wisdom body, right? Invincible wisdom body. Feel me? Yeah. That's right. My man said, up the rock is a brawl to the latest rock on the altar. His bitch salty, she came in rocking a halter.
Come on.
Then his granny came in slow, walk on the walker. She's from Arkansas, Little Rock, I know cause she's a talker. Up the mind of Minota, I'm like the mind of Travolta. Reclining on the sofa, Coca-Cola on the coaster. Behind me, Hulk Hogan on a poster. I'm feeling kosher. Pick up a phone, order samosas and a dosa. He asked me, would I like something else? I told him, no, sir. The food will be ready in 10, unless you're closer. My girl told me she wanted Ponderosa, put on my loafers, Miko ferocious like that of a poacher. Yeah, a rare rapper, I'm something like a bear trapper. I snare snappers, I grab them in the air backwards. And I don't fuck with these flare rappers cause they're actors. Air clappers on the bubble like Air Maxes. My axe is sorta like a Braxis. I'm swarting patches, noxious gadgets combined with a box of matches. Amoxicillin combined with a splotch of rashes. A monster killing, a shrine in a box of ashes. The way I move, something like a fascist. Boxing cashes, a Muslim's running from a blast at a mosque in Damascus.
Hello, this is retired trooper Ron Turley. In my 27 years of working on the Kentucky State Police, I ran into a lot of people who did not leave early enough for their destination and ended up with a ticket or even involved in a collision. So if you're preparing to go somewhere, leave early. Allow enough time. Say, what if you run into traffic and what if there's a problem on the roadway? You'll still have time and be able to enjoy your ride. So let's leave early, plan in advance, so that you can arrive safely without getting a ticket.
This message is brought to you by the It Starts With You campaign, a partnership between Toyota and Lexington Community Radio.
It can be awkward to talk to your partner about STDs, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't. Half of sexually active people under the age of 25 will get a sexually transmitted infection. Most of them won't even know it, because many STDs have no symptoms. Do you know your STD status? The only way to be sure is to get tested. If you're uncomfortable talking to your regular doctor about STDs, make an appointment with Planned Parenthood on their website at plannedparenthood.org. Don't have insurance? Free testing is available at the Lexington Health Department. Call them at 859-288-2483.
Hey everybody, what's up? You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM, Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from 6th Street up on the beautiful historical north side of Lexington, Kentucky. My name is Chuck, and what's up, Jess?
Hi, Chuck.
Yeah,
sorry, I'm late.
No worries. And Jess is with us. Jess Mueller. Hey, Jess.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
And with us in the studio is Hendrick Floyd.
My peoples.
Shiesty Christ.
Yes. Love y'all.
What you just heard, a track off of that OMG mixtape released before the album.
Yeah.
It was great. So, you know, I want to ask you next, you know, I'm going to talk about Cold Winter.
Yeah.
You know, can you talk to us about that project? This is your first official full release.
Yeah.
Your first not.
First
your
official solo release.
Solo release.
Yeah, solo record, I guess.
So Cold Winter. So how did that whole project come about?
Yeah, that was, you know, what I've always liked to do, even in terms of like creating like a band.
Mm-hmm.
I like to do a lot of one-offs. Mm-hmm. So there was a young lion, Lo Fidel, who I had met many, many years ago and as a producer, and he I knew I wanted to work with him. And so I said, hey man, let's put together this record.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really wanted this analog, mm-hmm. gritty, kind of grimy record. I wanted it to sound and to feel like dust.
And his beats are crunchy.
Yeah, they're really, really crunchy and really analog and lo-fi. Mm-hmm. And it was the sound that I wanted for that record, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted Cold Winter. I wanted it to feel like a cold winter. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't have Cold Winter and have it be like,
yeah,
it's all clean, hey, and easy. Yeah, exactly. Sonically, you always have to match the temperament.
Snowball fights.
Exactly. You know what I mean? No, exactly.
It's
no, that's it.
It's dark. Long nights.
Yeah. So I reached out to him. I said, hey man, let's do a record. And I said, now in order for us to do this record, we're going to do a lot of records.
Mm-hmm.
And you know. And I remember the first time, like he sent me something, and maybe it was like something I heard from him, and he sent me a beat, and I wrote this song. I wrote a song called Cold Winter, to it, and I said, yo man, I wrote this. You sent me this beat, and I wrote this song Cold Winter, and he said, what, you wrote Cold Winter? He said, I got to go back into the session. He said, but I think when I did that beat initially, I named that beat Cold Winter.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
and so he said, let me hit you back. And so he went into his sessions and he was like, oh yeah. He was like, man, when I did that beat, like I named that beat Cold Winter. Now when he sent it to me, it would have been like Lo Fidel 5 or,
yeah,
or whatever.
Of course.
But that was like a sort of a kismet moment, you know. Mm-hmm. For us, it was like, oh, okay. Like we're really locked in.
Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, like, you know, just totally separately, we both did this Cold Winter thing, and it mm-hmm. was like it was right.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, that was the first record.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah,
and so that came out, what is it, 2 years ago?
Man, it'd be 3 years in January.
Years, yeah.
Yeah, like it's crazy. It'll be three years in January.
That's great.
I feel like that was our last really cold winter in Lexington.
So funny story. So the coldest winter on record,
mm-hmm.
in Kentucky,
yeah,
was the year that cold winter came out.
Nice. You knew it.
Exactly. And I remember
something in the air.
People were like I kept getting messages from people, like they every time I would post about it, and they would be like they felt like I hexed the city. Like you put out this like people like legit like caught feelings about like, man, wow, like you put out this record Cold Winter, and
yeah,
here we have like the cold, and it was just blistering cold that year, like literally the coldest winter on record. Mm-hmm. So the coldest winter on record, I drop an album.
Yeah.
Cold Winter.
Hip hop barometer.
No doubt about it.
Fitting.
Yeah.
It is fitting.
It is,
you know. Yeah. And so, you know, your reception, how was the reception for that album?
Yeah, it was great.
You know?
It was crazy. I mean, we to this day, one of the hardest things about sort of being an artist is everything has a shelf life,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And we're into quickly consuming stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that new Arcade Fire record comes out, so we quickly consume it, and then like it just goes like, okay, what's the next record I'm listening to? Like, mm-hmm. we don't listen to records like we used to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
What's great about that record is we still sell that record.
Yeah,
like people are still buying that record. Like, mm-hmm. it's 3 years old and people are still like, they still want it. They mm-hmm. still have a connection to it, and that is that's hard to do as an artist in general.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also hard to do as an underground artist to continually sell a product that that people are like, okay, like we still got to have it.
Right.
You know,
like a product that's timeless, yeah. You know, like,
yes.
Because that fast consumption, I haven't thought about it in that way, but we do it with music too.
Yes, man.
So even as listeners, we're looking for, something quick just and to dispose, you know, but
yeah,
right.
But yeah, there's classic vinyl albums that I grew up listening to. I listened to hundreds and hundreds of times.
You just keep putting them back. You keep putting them back on. And when you don't have it anymore, you go out and you get it.
Yeah. It's something about, I think, that emotional catharsis, that certain albums draw certain emotions out of people, make them feel a certain way.
Yes.
And I think that way that you feel and that emotion that you feel motivates you to keep going and doing whatever it is that you do.
Yeah.
At least for me, that's what it is. Like, I've got certain records, if I'm like, all right, I need to get some work done, this is what I'm going to listen to, you know, and because it's motivating. It's a cathartic experience.
It is.
Listening to it.
Yeah, it truly is.
And, you know, Cold Winter also has an international audience, right? I mean, you went and toured with that record up in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
Open up for Cunnilingus.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But even more importantly, like, we literally have shipped that record, like, to every corner of the universe.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's crazy. If I pardon me.
Oh, no worries.
This is what happens when you, when you're pretty like this,
that's
man.
True.
You have to have an imperfection.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, you know. That sounded good, right? No doubt about it. But we shipped that record all over the world. We continue to ship it all over the world. And definitely toured. And people knew that record. Yeah,
what do you think the connection is, overseas with that album compared to maybe the connection people have in the States, Kentucky?
So one of the things about being American, and you have to get outside of America to see it, is that we truly are a privileged class. Like even people who are like notoriously bad off, like there are certain things that we just expect, right? So if you ever come to a Shiesty Christ show, typically one thing I always say is, I'm not here to entertain you. I'm here for us to entertain each other as a crowd. And that's what I always say to the crowd. Like, it's not like I'm not here to do my job as a performer, but I think as Americans, we tend to kind of sit back and we're like, okay, I paid my money for this. I've got my beer in my hand that I just paid to this bar. Now you, sir,
this better
madam,
be good.
This better be, you're going to entertain me, you know? And overseas, I think in general, it's like the folks are just locked in, you know, from the very beginning, you know, like they just want it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, we're consuming this. And so you walk out and they're like, they're ready, you know, but here it's like, okay, what are you going to do for me?
And I remember you telling me, you know, maybe it was a show you played in Nice.
Yeah.
I think where like people knew all the words, they knew all your verses
and
wrapped them with you in the show, you know?
Yeah. That's a big, you know, when you look out, you have an incredibly underground record and you look out and people are like really locked into your material. Mm-hmm. Like they know it like word for word, song for song. Like it doesn't matter. Like it's like, oh, okay.
And this isn't just like a hook.
Yeah.
These are like some pretty complex verses.
Yeah, they are.
Some serious wordplay.
Yeah, they are. But I think again, this goes into how people consume stuff overseas. I think it's just like, man, I want, and you know this as an artist, writer, that, you know, people want to taste every word that you say. The reason why we used to pay attention to records and we used to sit back and like read the lyrics is because it was very much an experience for us. Mm. So when you're sitting back listening to that Led Zeppelin 2 album, right? And back in the old days, you put your headphones on and, you know, you'd lay back and you really want to be in the zone for that record. And it was very much like, you're not going to do anything else but listen to this record. And then you're gonna read the cover with the lyrics on it. Mm. And you're like, everything that Robert Plant, you know, and those guys are doing, like, you want to taste it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, let me just say this with them. You know, let me learn it this way. And I think there's something to be said for that. Whereas, again, now we're more in consume mode.
Yeah.
Right. You know, people want to know immediately. And people don't know this, but like the worst thing you can ask, maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, are my records on Spotify?
Mm.
And a lot of times I won't put records on Spotify because we become such a consumptive, like culture where your record, people don't care to like sit back and really listen to your record. It's like, okay, I'm gonna put this on now. All right, now I'm jumping to this record. Yeah. Okay, yeah, okay, Charles Bradley's next. And you know, it's just really this sort of jukebox mentality.
Yeah, and your album wasn't recorded to have a Lowe's Depot or a Home Depot ad to be, you know, put in the middle of every two or three tracks.
No, and that's the thing, man. Like, you know, like support your artists, but like, just know that like artists like me, we put everything into like a record. Mm-hmm. Like we don't mess around. Like if we're writing a record, it's very intentional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just such a more personal relationship on Spotify. Sometimes I wonder, like, are people curating what they're listening to based on what other people are listening to or based on what other people see? Where it used to be a much more organic experience. Like, you would just pick the music you wanted and you weren't necessarily influenced. You shared music.
Yes.
You didn't influence each other with your music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like on Spotify, it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like we used to have depend on tastemakers, our friends who we knew were into good music, to turn us on to new stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But now we're depending on a program based on algorithms, based on what we've already listened to. So I think the potential of something that's totally out of our wheelhouse is a lot more now. Is a lot less now, you know, just because Spotify is based on calculations rather than just your friend who might be into something you're totally unaware of.
Right. And you're in that moment and you're like, oh man, I just got this great new album. You know, this would be the perfect setting for it. It just doesn't seem as special anymore.
I'll take you guys back. You guys just said something that's really interesting, right? So back in the days, how to date yourself, hashtag how to sound like an old person. You would walk into a record store and the relationship. So I remember going back into Bear's Wax when Bear's Wax was where Sammy's was, and walking into Cut Corner Records. And the first thing that you would do, you walk in and you had a relationship, like your record person was like your drug dealer, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, for lack of a better term, right? I mean,
maybe literally.
I mean, depending on the store. maybe literally. Yeah. I wasn't going to say anything, but yes, that is correct.
I assure you, CD Central is not selling drugs.
At all.
Trust me, I've tried.
I've tried, and they won't give you any.
I'm just kidding.
I know, that's right. Steve's over there like, what's going on
Steve's
here?
Like, Jack, shut up.
Music can be a fix.
No, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But the beauty was that, Your music guy was like your weed guy. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's all pretend that we live in California or like Denver. Yeah. And so what I just said, like, is like
or all Portugal.
Yeah, or wherever. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so you would walk in and you would go, like, what's new? Like, what you got? Mm-hmm. And what they would do is they would come from behind the counter and they'd go, like, come on. Like, I want, like, man, we just got this in. And they would, like, go up. You know, it's like a librarian. You know, like, so here's a new record. And this is really, really good. Mm-hmm. And this is a new record. But this is okay if you're into this kind of thing. Yeah. And so the relationship that you had with your music guy was just like, here's that Kush.
It's true.
Exactly. Here's that bubble gum. Yeah. You know, and now it's like you walk into a record store. Like, you barely get a hello.
Right.
People, like, don't care what you're there to consume. They don't care to help you. Mm-hmm. They're not going to help you navigate any territory. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is very fitting for how we consume music now, because there's nobody really to help you navigate. Like you said, it's just some weird thing. A lot of times what you don't understand is that record labels are paying for these kind of placements. So when you look, you know, in your Spotify list or whatever, you know, it's possible that a record label is buying ad time or whatever, and somehow that record just magically, you know, shows up and hey, this, you should check this record out.
It's
not that old process.
Yeah,
it's not an old process.
It's programming you.
It is in a not so good way sometimes.
Yeah, there's less chaos.
Yeah.
So there's a few things I want to talk to you about before we wrap up here. And one of which is the Foundation.
Yeah.
Which, for folks that don't know, is a monthly hip hop open mic.
Yeah.
That goes down at the album up on North. I guess that's North Limestone at that point.
Currently on hiatus.
Yeah.
Just me pull that back and for good reason. Sometimes you have to hit a reset button.
It's true. Like we talked about many times. You know, sometimes you just got to go out.
Yeah.
You know, learn.
Yeah.
And come back
and
come stronger.
Back, come back stronger. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I just think that the Foundation, and kudos to you and Justin for putting that together, because I think it's really spawned a whole new growth of a new era and a new generation of Lexington hip hop.
Which is exactly what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, when we set out, a lot of times when people, you know, hey, we're going to do this open mic thing, it's really about the aggrandizement of the people who are putting it on.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I'm going to do this so that people can associate me with the scene in a certain kind of way. Mm-hmm. What Justin and I have always talked about are the new. Mm-hmm. Who are the new people who are coming up? And also, who are the people who've been doing this for a long time who might not necessarily have a voice mm-hmm. in it? We want to pull those people together. That's what we talked about before creating the foundation. And that's exactly, it became exactly what we set out for it to become.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing. It's amazing what's come of it. And hope it comes back soon.
Oh, it's coming. It is. It'll be back this fall.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And another thing I wanted to talk to you about is your radio show, which is going to be on in about 2 hours here on the same station.
Yeah.
So don't turn off.
Yeah, exactly.
Hiss and Hers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the world's only all cassette show.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
So I just know from preparing for your show and just listening to cassettes that it takes a long time to prepare an hour's worth of material.
Yeah, you can't dial it in.
Yeah.
Right? That's the thing about cassettes are you can't dial it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no digital scrub.
No.
You know, it's there. It's on the tape. Either it's lined up in the right spot or it's not.
Or it's not.
Yeah,
or it's not. And even things like going through and listening to a tape to make sure that the integrity of that tape is good. Like, so every song that I play, I listen to from top to bottom just to make sure that that song sounds good sonically because it's on a format that it's not consistent. You know, like it literally might... You know, it might go out. Someone may have recorded over it or something like that.
Someone might have put a PM Dawn track over the
top. It's really intensive. You know? It's a really intensive process.
So I just know from knowing you that you're a big fan of collecting analog material. So your cassette collection is pretty substantial.
Enough
to be able to do this show.
It is. It's insane, actually.
You also collect laser discs, right?
And a few other things. Man, it's the thing. So I have what I call an outdated technology fetish, right?
Yeah.
And... So the idea is, I'm always collecting stuff that people don't pay any attention to.
Got that Betamax collection.
I actually do.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, if you can name it, what I try to do, though, is with every collection that I have, I always try to keep it within reason. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I have a nice, real nice movie collection for sure. But, like, if I'm collecting laser discs, like, I want a shelf.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For like, sure. I don't want like a whole bookcase of like, it's just because there's a point to where it just gets absurd.
Yeah.
If I collect Beta and I probably have, 75 or 100, but it's very much like, okay, that's it. You know what I mean? Like you're not getting any more of these because it can get crazy.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the period of cassettes that you play? Like what's that range? I don't even know.
Man, it's as long as the cassette plays, I'm all over the place. I mean, we go everywhere so the cassettes are right now are in like its biggest production phase like ever.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, and it's mostly because you have so many indie bands, folks like ourselves. I mean, every project that I do, I try to do a limited edition cassette of some kind. You know what I mean? Like,
awesome.
Yeah, like so Cold Winter is out on cassette. You know, literally every project that I've done, for the most part, has none for OMG, but we might put some out.
Yeah.
You know, at some point I might just go, hey, you know what? Let's put it on cassette.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. And so, Hendrick, do you have anything coming up that you want to let us know about? What are you working on right now?
Yeah, currently, and I should have this in the next, this should be out in the next month or two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on a project with DJ. I typically don't talk about things, until they're done and I got it in my hand. But to heck with it, forget about that. But I'm working on a project with a DJ who's putting together a record for me. The name of the record is Impossible Feat, The Lifetimes and Baseless Meanderings of an Underground Rapper Named Shiesty Christ. that's the title. And it's basically like DJ hip hop thing, you know what I mean? Like taking verses that I've done from a certain time period and like putting them all together and curating them in his own way. That project's gonna be dope, and we should have that out in the next month or two.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool. So get ready for that one because there is a bunch of like unheard stuff on this project. People don't know this, but Deacon and I put together a project directly after KY Aliens. We did the Liquid Swords record, and that's been vaulted for almost 10 years.
Wow.
And so so some of the stuff off that is gonna get released it's crazy.
All the Jizza Beats.
Jizza Beats, man. Yeah. Yeah. And it was at a time, you know, me, I can go for like 1,000 bars. You know what I mean? So yeah. A lot of times it's like, I just, you know, like they, when I, you know, people will typically do like 16 bar stuff, but anyone I've ever rapped with is like, okay, here's Shiesty.
Is that the impossible feat? 1,600 bars?
Yeah, no. But I think there are times literally when I mean, I might rap for like 3, 4, 5, you know, minutes straight, like literally like bar, you know, just like, and crazy, you know, crazy amount of bars, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Hendrick, thank you. First of all, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. And, you know, I've always admired your lyricism and your dedication to hip hop, but also just your wordplay and your complexity.
Thank you.
You know, I'm that guy that's, when your record drops, I'm sitting there with the lyric sheet like, okay, I'm going to soak all this in, because I know it didn't just haphazardly come together.
Man, for you to say that shows that there are still people like us who still care about the intricacies of word and wordplay. You know, because this is high art to us. Yeah. This isn't, you know, coming up with like catchy, quick stuff is easy, but to layer things in a certain kind of way, it's like you come back to it, and maybe the key sometimes is, someone may have heard you say something 100 times, but the 100th time they're like, I never realized that that they did that.
Right.
And that's what we're always striving for. It's like, as artists, we're always striving not just to like to make things apparent, but to sometimes disguise things in a way that it takes you a long time before you finally go, oh man, like, I get it. Mm-hmm. So to hear you say that, I really appreciate you saying that.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
My man.
And thank you. And, you know, keep at it. And we're looking forward to hearing that new project.
My man, it's going to be crazy. Wait. Yeah, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy. People going to love this one, I think.
So I'm going to end the show with a track called Superman 75 off the Cold Winter record. Is there anything you want to say about this song?
Yeah, man. Well, you know what I will say about this song? It's something that I would probably never get a chance to say. But I remember actually somebody, a guy, you know, who you would never look at as appreciating like hip hop at all. He hits me up on Facebook and he rapped the whole verse to me. Like, and he's like, man, like this really affected me in a really interesting kind of way. Mm-hmm. And it was just like one of those moments where like most people would have been like, okay, I'm gonna grab that and I'm gonna put it up and you know, show the world. It was just like, man. Like, because this record, if you listen to it really closely, there's a strong sense of melancholy in it. Also, hope. It's a really weird song, and also a very veiled attempt at like describing like mankind's place in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
My man.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, Hen, always a pleasure.
Cold. That was cold.
It's cold. Ice cold. It's great. So, nonetheless, Hendrick Floyd, Shiesty Christ.
I love y'all.
Love you too, man. Thank you so much for coming in.
Namaste.
And everybody, stay locked in, because we'll be back here in a few minutes with Sherry Evans Depp. But stay tuned, because at 3 o'clock, Hendrick Show is coming up.
It's coming.
He's going to bring some beautiful cassette music to you. But nonetheless, it's a Superman 75 from Shiesty Christ off of Cold Winter. You're listening to Bluegrass Biles. So we'll hear you in a bit.
This is New York, the world's largest city, the heart of financial networks that encircle the globe, the largest single concentration of theaters, operas, music halls, and entertainment centers. Yes, this is New York.
I was taught how you break a man's will, show a man himself, that'll make a man ill. Heart that'll make a man chill. Like too much fake shit don't make a man real. Food for thought don't make a man a meal. There's too many holes in this whole man of steel. Yeah, a Superman without a cape, a beach without sand, land without an ape. It's like a fucking boombox without a tape. How the fuck can you be Superman and out of shape? A man that used to fly and lift planets, the highest in metaphor for man who sniffs granite. Someone who smokes, flips, and sniffs Xanax. The thing about a plan, man, is that you have to plan it. Yeah, you used to daydream with Noah's. Now you have to stoop to see this man at his lowest. Someone so strong that he can throw us, but now seems affected by the same winds that blow us.
guess that's the fate of mankind. You wait just to calculate the weight of man's mind. And heavy is the burden, so why waste your time giving advice to a man when you can barely get a word in? Look up in the sky, it's a bird.